pick something.
Whatever. I'm not familiar with it. I just started reading this morning.
I'll start from the appearance. There's a tissue in there, is that what it
is? That's its appearance, right?
Yeah.
I just put it in there because just a placement.
You don't want me to read the Sanskrit?
No. Well, to you, but...
No. Okay. Appearance of Sri Chaitanya. O Brahman, please hear attentively about the unique appearance of that ocean of compassion, the all-pervasive and sense-controlled Supreme Master of the Cosmic Manifestation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Narada, the chief of the demigod sages, had departed for his own ashram, the infallible Lord, who possesses infinite opulence, entered within the mind of the Brahman sage, Sri Jagannath Mishra. By virtue of the Lord's presence, in due course of time, the chaste and saintly Sachi Devi conceived Jagannath's powerful seed within her womb. She became pregnant with the expansion of Sri Hari, as the blessed Ganga River bore the potency of Shiva. Her luster increased day by day like the waxing moon. When Jagannath Mishra saw his wife becoming filled with great beauty and a luster like molten gold, he felt blessed with much opulence and his heart exalted. Seeing Sachi in such an exalted state, the demigods, headed by Brahma and others, such as the Gandharvas, the immortals, together with Indra, took to the skies. Tears filled their eyes and choked their throats out of jubilation, and with folded hands and bowed heads, they offered these prayers, all blissfully. I bow down to you, O Aditi, mother of Sri Hari. Your womb is effulgent like the moon, sun, and fire. By your pure and patient pregnancy, you maintain the Lord.
There's no mention of the earlier births.
No. Just that, the next verse talks about how Sachi Mata is the same personality. Your pregnancy is free from envy and blessed with all perfection. Indeed, yours is the womb of the Vedas, and you personally give birth to Lord Hari in his every incarnation, becoming Devaki, Rohini, and Yashoda. In your womb, you bear he who will spread the process of yajna named Sankirtan, the Sankirtan yajna and his great purificatory potency that is unobtainable through the Vedic process of yajna. If even persons such as ourselves hear but for a split second such kirtan of Krishna's names as Lord Narahari will bring, they can achieve love for him. Such love is unattainable even by the performance of millions of fire yajnas. Split second. That's all it takes. Love a mantra. Oh, how wonderful! In ancient times, Sri Hari, in his form of Mohini Murti, personally awarded me Amrita after we Devas had churned the milk ocean along with the Asuras. Yet this Hari Nam Amrita is a million times superior. Now through our ears we shall drink Rasamrita as we hear the glories of Sri Hari. In comparison with such kirtan, my heart considers even liberation insignificant. After conversing in this manner, Indra, along with the devas, offered respectful obeisances to Satyadevi. Then, placing Brahma at their head, they departed for their own abodes, singing the glories of Sri Hari. Sri Pati's expansion was about to be born in the earth. Thus, the demigods jubilantly lauded the good fortune of the people of Kali Yuga and danced, overwhelmed by prema. This demigods was headed by Indra, but included who? To say? On the auspicious full moon night of the month of Palguna, when all virtuous qualities of men were in attendance, and a breeze bearing pure fragrances blew, when the minds of demigods and godly men were tranquil, when the waters of the celestial Ganga were crystal clear, Sri Hari appeared by his own wish. Sri Jagannath Mishra Purandara saw his son's eyes as blossoming lotus flowers, his face like the effulgent full moon, and his complexion like gold. By the child's potency, darkness in all directions was dispelled. Jagannath found no limit to the mellifluous ocean of love he felt for his child. He felt just like a pauper finding a vast treasure, and because his voice was choked with love, he was unable to speak clearly. Just after the Lord's birth, Rahu impudently swallowed the moon, considering that the beauty of the moon had been utterly defeated by Sri Krishna's beautiful lotus face. Thus, while entering the mouth of that enemy of the demigods, the moon appeared to disappear. At that auspicious time, all people performed kirtan of Narahari. With much eagerness, they offered worship, distributed charity, and bathed, cleansing themselves from sin in the holy water of Janivimata. The hosts of Suras, headed by Indra, as well as Brahma and Shiva, rejoiced, and Apsaras danced with sublime excellence, while on earth, great-hearted social dignitaries showered gifts of charity on deserving persons. Because he was aware of the auspicious time at which his daughter's son had been born, Sri Nilambara Chakravarti, who was learned in all Shastra, felt joyful. Quickly he went to the ashram of his son-in-law and called for Jagannath Mishra and Satyadevi. That very thoughtful gentleman said, "He possesses noble character. Indeed, his character is the original shelter of all virtues. By becoming the topmost of all renunciates, he shall bestow love on all living beings, just as the full moon floods the night sky with nectar. This person shall perpetually award deliverance to the dynasties of his father and mother. Hearing the Brahmin speak, thus all the people present became overjoyed." Hearing the Brahmin speak thus, all the people present became overjoyed. Hearing these words from her father, the child's mother felt very happy, and Jagannath Mishra, feeling much affection for his son, performed a great festival to celebrate his birth. He distributed pan, sandalwood paste, garlands, and scented oil to the Brahmins. As his son grew, he performed in natural sequence the various auspicious ceremonies at time of the boy's first standing up, and so forth. Thus ends the fifth sagra entitled The Appearance of Sri Chaitanya in the first prakrama of the great poem Sri Chaitanya Charita. Sixth sagra. Kumara Kriya Lila, the playful pastimes of Sri Guru in his childhood. As time passed, the husband and wife delighted to see the child crawling on his knees and to hear the melodious sound of his prattle. That monarch, among the twice-born, had a face resembling a red lotus. By the rays beaming from his sweet smile, he dispelled all darkness from the minds of godly men. He is the maintainer of the universe since time immemorial. Thus his father intuitively gave him the very beautiful name Vishwambhara.
Intuitively gave him the name.
Although we are here at Nilambara Chakravarti's prediction of this divinity, also.
He already said his name?
No. Sri Vishwambhara Hari's body was dazzling, like molten gold. His sparkling eyes were widespread, like the petals of a lotus. His garments were scattered and his beauty all attractive. Curly locks clustered around his face and his presence dispelled all inauspiciousness. His face resembled the moon as it spreads nectar throughout the night, and his charming speech also was nectarian. His appearance was thus altogether charming, enhanced still further by his ornaments, loose bangles and armbands. The gleaming palms of his lotus hands and the soles of his lotus feet had the ruddy hue of kumkum powder. Day by day, he grew swiftly like the moon, lord of the night, in its waxing fortnight. As time passed, that limitlessly lustrous lord began to walk. Thus, whenever he withdrew from her surface, his reddish soles, he made the earth goddess experience pains of separation. I guess that means whenever you lie down.
Alright. If you lift it up 1 foot, to move the other.
Gaur Janardhan, who inspires the hearts of all men, thrice ate the rice cooked by a Brahmin who was wandering on pilgrimage. He then reminded that Brahmin of their previous association during the eternal festival within the house of Nanda Maharaj.
He just mentions it.
Yes, that's all he says about that. I guess it's, he leaves it up to Vrindavan Das Thakur. As he played with other little boys of the same age, all the children would duel with one another, using the twigs of trees for their weapons, and they derived much joy from those games. Sri Hari, in the guise of an ordinary boy, would sometimes imitate the antics of monkeys. Standing with a single foot on the ground, he would touch the knee of another boy with his knee. Once seeing that his mother was exasperated with him and was attempting to restrain him, Gaur Hari became filled with fury and broke all her clay pots. In ancient times, this same child also broke pots. At that time, Yasoda Mata bound him with the ropes used for tying cows, while Bala Gopal trembled fearfully. But at present, that same Yasoda, appearing as Sachi, trembled in fear to see the wrathful face of Vishwambhava. It's also described in Chaitanya Bhagavat. I guess that was when Lord Chaitanya asked for garlands, sandalwood to worship Gangadevi. And Sachi Mata said she will get them for him now, just now coming. He became furious. He began breaking all the clay pots, broke everything in the house, pulled everything out of the rafters, and began smashing the walls of the house. They went on the ground, began banging the ground, and then fell into yoga nidra and sleeping. It's a whole description of Chaitanya Bhagavad, how he destroyed everything. When Sachi Mata, she became very disturbed because she was thinking that everything in the house belongs to Nimai, wife, therefore did he destroy everything in the house, it was all his. So then when he took the garland and the ingredients for puja and went down to Ganga, she began cleaning everything up and lamenting, how is she going to be able to replace everything?
Jagannath Mishra was already departed.
Yeah, he had already departed.
Uh-huh. I didn't even mention that.
Yeah, he had already departed. She was living as a widow. She was living in great poverty, and she was thinking that he might have destroyed everything, and now everything's gone. She'll never be able to replace it. And while lamenting in that way, then Nimai returned from his doing his worship of Ganga. And I think it was later that day, he went off someplace and returned with 2 tolas of gold. And he said, look, Mata, Krishna's taking care of us. Why are you in fear? Why are you in anxiety? And Sachi Mata, she was also disturbed. She didn't know what to do with this gold. She thought maybe her son had stolen it, got it by some inappropriate means. So she was afraid to take it to the marketplace and to show it, thinking that by so doing, it may implicate Nimai.
Uh-huh. Going down. So then what happened?
I think eventually she took it to the marketplace and she replaced everything that Nimai had destroyed. But she was very careful. I think she gave it, or must have given it to Ishan, I guess, to come to take to the marketplace and to have it exchanged. Also broken pots in ancient times. But at present, that same Yasoda, appearing as Sachi, trembled in fear to see the wrathful face of Vishwambhava. It's also described as she was hiding while he was destroying everything in the house. She was hiding.
Oh.
She was afraid to expose herself. She didn't know in which direction he would swing the stick. Somehow it seems to connect the next verse. Then climbing on the very top of the dump of abandoned and smashed clay cooking pots, Gaurhari sat down in full view of his mother and laughed at her. Seeing him, Sachi says, "My dear boy, please leave that impure place. When you have bathed and are again clean, come and sit on my lap." Actually, I don't know, somehow, maybe this reference breaking pots is a different lila. Because this lila, when he was sitting on the clay pots, Jagannath Mishra was still present. Because she was chastising, he said, "If you don't get down from the pots, I'm going to call your father."
Uh-huh.
And that was because Jagannath Mishra refused to allow him to study any further because he was distressed.
That's right.
And that's why he sat on the clay pots.
Yeah, saying, "Well, just see how ignorant I am. If I don't let me study, then what do you expect? Just going to see if there's any flowers to put behind the altar."
Then climbing on the very top of the dump of abandoned and smashed clay cooking pots, Gaurami sat down in full view of his mother and laughed at her. Seeing him, Sachi said, "My dear boy, please leave that impure place. When you have bathed and are again clean, come and sit on my lap." After she had spoken thus, the all-opulent personality of Godhead, who is conversant with all truths, who gives wisdom to all wise men, spoke the philosophy that had formerly been propounded by Dattatreya, the Avadhuta sage. "Hear me. The concept of cleanliness or uncleanliness is simply imaginary. This universe is known to be composed of earth, water, fire, air, and space, and there is but one source, Sri Hari. From his non-dual lotus feet, the universe was formerly manifested and distributed. He is an ocean of mercy and he forever illuminates this world. There is no one beyond him. Just have faith in Lord Hari. Therefore, I am in a purified state and am not at any time contaminated. Just understand this, mother. You should have no further doubts in this matter." After her son had spoken in this way, Sachimata clasped his hand and, leading him away, bathed him in the crystal clear water of the celestial river Ganga. Then, after a short time had passed, she again saw her son sitting on the heap of clay cooking pots. She chastised him. "You dull-brained boy, why are you sitting in that contaminated place, although I have already forbidden you to do so?" Upon hearing these words from his mother, Sri Vishwambhara angrily replied, "O foolish woman, as I explained to you before, this place is not in the least impure, so why do you scold me?" So saying, he angrily threw a fragment of clay at her face. Becoming agitated because of that blow, Sachimata fainted, tumbling to the ground.
Chaitanya Bhagavat said he slapped her, right?
I don't even remember either, actually. Yeah.
I remember Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he hit her, struck her with his hand.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Yeah, here it says throw a piece of clay at her face. Then all the women came there and sprinkled Sachi with cool water. Oh yes, that's right. And Sri Hari, enacting the role of the human child, quickly came to her, loudly crying, "Mata, Mata!" Affectionately, he placed his graceful hand upon her face, and thus alleviated all pain from her heart. At that, Sachi Devi suddenly became fully conscious, and taking her son on her lap, she became filled with intense maternal affection and delighted in him, oblivious to all else. Then one light-hearted lady said jokingly to the spiritual master of the cosmos, "If you can pick 2 coconuts and give them to your mother, she will be well. Otherwise, she will die. But how can a little boy like you do this?" That's right. After hearing these words from the lady, Gaurahari speedily scrambled down from his mother's lap and went out of the house. Immediately he returned bearing 2 coconuts and gave them to Sachimata. The 2 coconuts had clearly been felled that very moment along with a leaf and stem. Seeing this, the ladies were amazed and inquired of the boy, "Oh, where did you get them and how?" The very clever Vishwambara, whose ancestral flag bears a calf.
Ancestral flag bears a calf. What's referring to? Vrindavan.
Referring to?
Vrindavan.
Yes, I guess so. With loud cries, baffled the curious lady's questions and presented to his mother his smiling face, which resembled a blossoming lotus. Now please hear further of the potent, astonishing, superhuman, and virtuous activities of the magnanimous Lord. He is the supreme mystic who expands himself as the all-pervasive supersoul. Once, while Sachi Devi was resting, she saw that her home was apparently filled with people of a very exalted nature, who were only slightly visible. Being much perturbed and anxious for her son, who was lying in her lap, she hastily sent him to her husband's room. On the way, Sri Vishwambara Hari was offered worship by the demigods. While their son was walking through the courtyard, his patients heard very distinctly the sound of ankle bells ringing on his feet, and although he was not wearing any, confused, Jagannath and Sachi asked one another, "What is that? Where is that sound coming from?" Chaitanya Bhagavat, this is referred to in an earlier time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting how the pastime sort of chronology appears to be presented differently.
Yeah, a definitely different chronology. He was still crawling on his hands and feet.
Yeah.
At that time. When Jagannath came in front of his son, he was even more mystified because he saw very clearly that his lotus feet were without ankle bells as before. He wondered, from where did the melodious sound of ankle bells come? With great affection, the Brahmin warmly embraced his son and thereby tasted transcendental bliss. Thus ends the 6th sarga entitled "The Playful Pastimes of Sri Gauranga's Childhood," in the first prakrama of the great poem Sri Chaitanya Charita. 7th sarga, Balya Kriya Lila, Lord Vishwambara's boyhood pastimes. After hearing this, Damodar Pandit, who was feeling great delight as he meditated on these pastimes of Sri Hari's lotus feet, requested to hear the story of Sri Hari's older brother, saying, "Please narrate factually the celebrated story of Vishwarup." Murari replied, "So be it, O Brahman. Now listen carefully as I relate it to you." So saying, the physician began to tell the glorious and pleasing history of Vishwarup, who is actually a direct expansion of Sri Baladeva. Sri Vishwarup was an ocean of good qualities. At the age of 16, through following the path of hearing about and contemplating the Lord's name, form, paraphernalia, entourage, and pastimes, that very pure soul had achieved the qualification of acharya, teacher by example. He possessed very wonderful intelligence, and his qualities were exemplary of one matured in love for Krishna. He was all-knowing, and his mind was at all times attached to the lotus feet of Narahari. Hence, he was very jubilant, peaceful, and fully satisfied. He was unattached to the material world and was conversant with the Vedic wisdom and Rasa Tattva, the science of transcendental relationships. If his father was alone, he would consider the selection of a suitable bride for his son. Over and over he pondered over this question. The Brahman's son knew full well about this. Forbearing, Vishwarupa knew everything of his father's thoughts. Therefore, desiring to remain within the association of sadhus, he gave up his home, crossed the Ganga, and accepted the order of sannyas, which is difficult for others.
Who did he accept sannyas from?
I've never read that anyway.
Shankararanya. By the king.
Yes, yes, it's sannyas name. Was I read it in that Hari Katamrita, Krishna Katamrita, the old one. I think Guru Govinda Maharaj says that I think it was Vishwarup was the sannyasi who came and begged Hadai Pandit for his son.
That was hinted at in Chaitanya Bhagavat somewhere.
I saw a letter Giriraj Maharaj had written to Madhavananda asking him if he knew where Guru Govinda Maharaj got that reference. And Madhavananda wrote back that actually he'd never seen any reference. He'd never heard of any reference from Guru Govinda Maharaj, but it was the only place that had ever been. It was at that time he gave him a lecture on Nichananda's appearance day.
I'd already heard about it long, long, long time ago. But I can't remember where.
Oh, really?
Somewhere. I think that's where I heard it from. But I remember going long, long, long time ago, going to Eka Chakra with that time. Nitai Chand Goswami was the first one who took me there before this one had anything there. And before anyone even went there. And I think I may have just heard it at that time. but it's sort of known, said, maybe it's not written, but spoken.
Prabhupada saying Chaitanya Charitamrita Lola, how they merged, didn't they?
Yeah.
With the body of Nityananda.
Yeah.
When his father heard of this, he became delirious, and his saintly mother lamented very woefully. However, as well wishes of their son, they nobly said, "Our son is attached to the renounced order, so be it." Thus offering blessings for the welfare of their elder son, they themselves took the vow of sages by practicing forbearance, and thereby abandoned their lamentation. Then they placed their remaining son, the shelter of the universe, upon their laps, and at once tasted bliss. Then Gaurahari spoke, "Pitaji, my brother has departed for distant countries and given up your service. I will surely serve you and Mata. May you always be happy." As they heard the words of their son, which were not trivial, but profound, meaningful and charming, the father and mother became happy, and they embraced him with tears of joy in their eyes. Their limbs were made content by the intimate touch of his body. Their hearts became melted, and for that instant they knew nothing else. In the same way that accomplished yogis attain trance and consider neither this world nor the next. Vishwambhara then studied with a mind to serve his father, but at times he became absorbed in play in the midst of other boys. While so engaged, his body became gray from the dust, and he became oblivious to all else, including food, although he was hungry. Once, when his father observed the independent Supreme Lord in that condition, he chastised the boy, desiring his welfare. "Why have you abandoned your study and all other duties just to play in the midst of boys while tormented by hunger?" That night, towards the end of his rest, a noble Brahmin spoke to him in a dream, "Why do you think so little of your son? You are just like an animal who thinks nothing of a touchstone. Such an animal, if his body is decorated with a silken garment embroidered with jewels, will he not chew the garment?" Mishra fearlessly answered the Brahmin, "Even though Gaura may be Narayan himself, still in this life he is my son." And thus, it is my assured dharma to chastise him. At this, the Vipra replied, "Very good," and then departed. The affectionate father, feeling much enlightened, described the dream many times over. When the people of Navadvip heard of this dream, they jubilantly thought that Vishwambhara must be a very unique and exalted personality who had come just to fulfill their every desire. But the father and mother were content just to think of him as their son. Once, while dwelling in their home, suddenly the son of Sachi stood up, displaying a brilliant red luster like the rising sun. As his entire body shone with his potency, he commanded, "Mother, do as I bid you." Glancing timidly at her son, who had become so dazzling with power, she felt mystified and replied, "Dear son, whatever you say I shall do. Come, tell me what is on your mind." Hearing this, he replied with his nectarian voice, "Mata, henceforward on the holy day of Hari Shri Akadasi, you must fast." Hearing her son's order, Sachi accepted it enthusiastically, saying, "So be it." once after Nimai had eaten an offering of
bread. That means that they weren't fasting.
Unkadasi. Seems not.
Fasting means that they were eating grains, or that they just weren't eating grains, but they were eating.
Well, there was that whole pastime when he, as a young child, when he requested to have the grains that were being offered on Ekadasi day from Hiranyapandit, was it?
Hiranya and
Govardhan.
Jagadish.
Hiranya. And it was specifically in Chaitanya Bhagavad, it refers to the partaking of grains on Ekadasi, which was not supposed to be done, because they were offering the grains to Lord Vishnu. And they were asking, why are you asking for grains on this day?
So that you're saying they were fasting from grains?
From grains, yeah.
But now he's asking them to fast altogether.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be referring to a total fast.
Yeah, in the Jagannatha Pandit Prema Vivarta, there Lord Chaitanya is giving instruction on Ekadasi as being full fast, no drinking, not even Mahabhasaram, staying up all night chanting.
Seems to be a similar request being made here. Once after Nimai had eaten an offering of betel nut and chewing spices presented by a visiting Brahmin, the Brahmin said to Sachimata, "Now I am departing. Kindly take great care for the body of your son. Do not be inattentive for even half a moment." Just after the Brahmin had thus spoken, Gora abruptly stood up and swooned, falling like a rod onto the ground. Seeing Vishwambhara's condition, his mother became stricken with anxiety. She bathed him with the water of the Ganga, which is equal to immortal nectar. Then he awoke, restored to well-being, and he happily continued his life with natural vigor as before. Jagannath Mishra became astonished to hear of this event and exclaimed to his wife, "Certainly we cannot comprehend the power of the Lord's illusory energy." Upon hearing this divine narration from Murari Gupta, the Brahmin Damodar Pandit said, "Blessed sir, what is this tale that you have narrated? Lord Shri Krishna, the spiritual master of this cosmic manifestation, has, by his free will, appeared as Vishwambhara. Why then did the Brahmin say to Sachimata, 'I shall go now, therefore take care of your son, dear lady'? For what reason did he speak thus? I am much confused about this." I guess this is referred to earlier. This is a conversation between Murari Gupta and Damodar Pandit. "Because how can the Lord's illusory energy affect the Lord? Kindly speak of this, and may this history of Sri Hari bring benefit to all the people of the world." Thus ends the seventh sarga entitled Lord Vishwambhara's Boyhood Pastimes in the first prakrama of the great poem Sri Chaitanya Charita. So the question was specifically, why did the Brahmana ask Sachimata to take care of the son, if the son cannot by under any circumstances be influenced by the Lord's illusory energy? What need would there be for
taking care of him?
Taking care of him.
You subject to the influence of time and karma. Through the answer?
No answer. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I guess it's in the next chapter. Eighth Sarga. Jagannath Mishra Sasiddhi. Jagannath Mishra attains the highest perfection. After hearing Damodara's words, Murari considered them and pondered over them. Then, first bowing down to Sri Hari, he spoke as follows. Please hear me with rapt attention. When a very pure soul meditates on Sri Hari, or speaks and hears about him, the Lord thereby enters and arises within his heart. The Lord creates a semblance of himself in the bhakta, endowing him with his own eternal potencies and prowess, and thus the bhakta forever forgets all identification with his material mind, body, and related attachments. With the passage of time, as it becomes more and more aloof from the externals, at last he performs his bodily functions spontaneously, as did the enduringly jubilant devotee Prahlad Maharaj in ancient times.
And say it in Bhagavatam.
One who bathes in the ocean feels a oneness with it. However, upon reaching the shore, one remembers once more the separate state of his body. Similarly, the saintly wives of the cowherd men of Raj would on occasion taste oneness with Lord Krishna, as in the rasa dance, but when again they engaged in their household chores, they felt duality. The Lord performed this pastime to show the exalted stage attainable by the Krishna Bhakta who has awakened his Swarup in relation to Sri Krishna. That people are not confused regarding this point, Gaur Hari taught here that he lives and acts through the body of his devotee. Of this there is no doubt.
Is that clear?
Huh?
Is that clear?
I'm trying to understand. That's why I'm pausing here.
Is it the end of the answer?
There's a little bit more, but it doesn't seem to clarify. But I'll just read a little bit more, and then I wanted to mention something. When Lord Krishna slew the Keshi demon, and thus displayed his glory and power to Narada, that exalted sage fell to the earth, offering obeisances like a rod. Thus, that Vaishnava's transcendental quality became magnified 100 times as he departed from Mathura. Similarly, Sri Ramachandra, the cause of the cosmic manifestation, showed his universal form to Shiva and thereafter performed further human-like activities. So it seems to be saying that it simply creates a sense of absorption in the mind of the devotee.
Telling him to take care of him.
Yeah.
But it has nothing really to do with the answer to the question of, you know,
why does Krishna need to be taken care of if he can never be affected or influenced by the illusory energy?
Causes absorption.
Causes absorption seems to be the answer. Adipurusha was telling me last night that they were studying in Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur's commentaries. He was explaining how there are two Vrindavans. There's the happy Vrindavan and the Virahabhava Vrindavan. And I don't remember reading this commentary evidently, but it's a Sarasa Darshan. He said, for instance, when Uddhava first entered into Vrindavan, he saw how everybody was happy. Everyone was just, you know, blissfully performing their their duties even though Krishna was not there. And then later upon conversing with the gopis and Nanda Maharaj and other Jasoda, they saw their distressed state. So he was saying that their absorption, you know, he said that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states the two Vrindavans. Have you ever heard this before? The state where everyone is happy, and then there's a state where everybody is you know, apparently in total distress, distraught, you know, their bodies are drying up, they're on the point of death. They're two simultaneous manifestations.
I haven't heard it like that, as two separate abodes. I mean, it's to see in the actual commentary that
is
there then. But why not? I know that Raghava Charya, who wrote his book on Krishna's Leela, his pastime just goes as far, they don't go to Krishna Leela in Vrindavan. So that sort of doesn't exist for him. As a separate dham, but rather that it was just his mood above. We'll entertain the concept of Krishna leaving. Yeah, anything's possible. Why not?
You said you were studying that just the other day.
Must be.
This is a wonderful verse. One who bathes in the ocean feels a oneness with it. However, upon reaching the shore, one remembers once more the separate state of his body. Similarly, the saintly wives of the cowherd men of Raj, when on occasion taste oneness with Lord Krishna, as in the Rasa dance, but when again they engaged in their household chores, they felt duality. Interesting analogy. Being in the ocean, they're coming to the shore. The Lord performed this pastime to show the exalted stage attainable by the Krishna Bhakta, who has awakened his Swarup in relation to Sri Krishna. So that people are not confused regarding this point, Gaurav, he taught here that he lives and acts in the body of his devotee, of which there is no doubt. O Brahman, listen further to the sublime history of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. A mortal being who hears it with full faith becomes free from the bondage of birth and death. While staying in the house of his guru, the victorious Lord, the husband of Saraswati, studied all the Vedas. Thereafter, he began to teach his own students. While Sri Gohari was happily studying Vedanta Sutra and the other scriptures, his most fortunate father, the exalted Brahman Jagannath Mishra, returned to the Lord's abode. Doesn't describe here anything about Jagannath Mishra's dream. That's all Chaitanya Bhagavad. By the will of providence.
Ami abban a másik sötét ruhában van, de nincs benne a dobozban.
He walked outside. You got it. By the will of providence, Jagannath became afflicted with a fever that plundered his very life force. Seeing that his father was in such a condition, Vishwambhara Hari, with his mother, brought his father to the bank of the Ganga, surrounded by Bhagavad Bhaktas, all of whom were fully absorbed in Hari Kirtan. Embracing his father's feet, Sri Hari addressed him in a voice choked with tears. O venerable master, dear father, you are abandoning me so suddenly. Where will you go now? His father eagerly drank through his ears his son's nectarian words and replied, I have dedicated you completely to the lotus feet of Lord Raghunath. When the best of the demigods, headed by mighty Indra, appeared in the sky and the people on earth were immersed in Hari Sankirtan, the best of the twice born entered the water of the Ganga, abandoning his mortal coil. Taking his seat.
That means that they already took him down to the Ganges while he was still alive.
Yeah, yeah, there's no reference to Chaitanya Bhagavata. This is all. Yeah. Chaitanya Bhagavata just describes he had a dream. But Chaitanya, you know, Nimai had taken sannyas. Out of fear of having to witness that anxiety and distress. Shortly afterwards, he left his mortal coil, as described. When the best of the demigods, headed by mighty Indra, appeared in the sky, and the people on earth were immersed in Hari Sankirtan, that best of the twice born entered the water of the Ganga, abandoning his immortal coil. Taking his seat on a chariot of the celestials, he departed for Sri Hari's abode. He was an eternally liberated soul, came by his free will to benefit humanity by showing an example of pure fraternal devotion.
That's saying he walked by his own.
Taking his seat on the chariot of the celestials. Of course, it does also say abandoning his mortal coil. So it seems to imply that.
Well, different people may have been seeing different things.
When Jagannath Mishra had departed for the destination of perfected souls, Sachi Devi was deeply affected with grief. Surrounded by a group of women, she fell lamenting at the feet of her Prabhu, as the female osprey laments for her lost mate. As the ocean of mercy repeatedly grieved for his father, tears cascaded down from his eyes and glistened on his chest, creating an illusion of a lustrous string of pearls. Though filled with sadness, the Lord was pacified by his kinsmen. Then he performed acts of purification to invoke an auspicious future for his father. All these were performed by Brahmins according to the guidance of scripture. Apparently dejected, the Lord, feeling very affectionate for his father, used his accumulated wealth to perform a yajna for his father's welfare. Utilizing clay pots and other pure ingredients, afterwards he honored each of the Brahmins present according to their seniority and age. Man who recites with attention this narration of the entrance of Sri Gauranga's father into the spiritual abode will also attain the celestial Ganga at death. Immediately giving up all contamination, he will attain the abode of Sri Hari. Thus ends the eighth sarga, entitled Jagannath Mishra, attains the highest perfection in the first prakrama of the great poem Sri Chaitanya Charita. Yeah, it definitely seems to. It's not clear. He gave up his mortal coil at the same time he stood on the chariot and departed.
Well, one may be in spiritual body, one may be in material body.
Sri Gura Ninth Sarga, Sri Lakshmi Udvaha. Sri Gauranga's marriage to Srimati Lakshmi Devi. Thereafter, Vishvambhara made further studies under the eminent scholars Sri Vishnu Pandit, Sudarshana Pandit, and Gangadas Pandit. He gave knowledge to those highly learned Brahmins, and for their great benefit, he accepted knowledge from them. To instruct humanity, Sri Hari accepted a human-like form, apparently made of the illusory energy, and thus followed the path of study under the direction of Sri Sudarshana and the other pundits. He, who is conversant with every rasa, would merrily tell jokes in the Bengali language to Brahmins, who were traveling on pilgrimage, and he also laughed as they told amusing tales. After some time had passed, being eager to see him, Gaura went to the home of Acharya Vanamali, the matchmaker, with the purpose of accepting a spouse. While Sri Hari respectfully bade farewell and chatted with the Acharya, he saw the daughter of Sri Vallabhacharya on the footpath, surrounded by her girlfriends. That lady of radiant countenance was walking to the Janavi to bathe. When Sri Hari saw that maiden, in his heart he recognized her to be the very purpose for his birth. Then illustrious Vishvambhara departed for his residence, delighting with his companions' talk of Vidya Ras. Vidya Ras Kutubali. The next day, the transcendental Brahmin, Vanamali, came to the home of Sri Gauri and bowed respectfully to Sachi Devi. He spoke sweetly to her thus: "If you wish to get your son Vishvambhara married, I suggest that you select Lakshmi Devi, the goddess-like daughter of that excellent Brahmin, Vallabhacharya." Upon hearing this, Sachi Devi replied, "My son is but a fatherless boy. At present, his efforts must be directed towards his studies." After hearing her words, the Acharya went his way, somewhat dejected. But after walking a while on the path, he caught sight of Gaura Krishna, whose heart was brimming over with gladness. Gaura Bhagavan at once bowed down to Vanamali, and embracing him very firmly, inquired in a sweet voice, "Where is your honor going today?" Vanamali replied, "I have come just from seeing the feet of your mother. There I made a suggestion to her regarding your marriage, but she had no faith in my proposal. For this reason, I am now walking despondently." Gaura made no comment on the Acharya's words, but walked on, laughing. Arriving at his own ashram, Gaura said, "Mata, What did you say to the Acharya that made him so depressed as he walked on the path? Why did you not make him feel well loved by offering pleasing words? Suddenly he blessed his blessed mother became aware of the state of her son's mind, and she sent a trustworthy person to call back the Acharya. Quickly, Vanamali returned, and after respectfully bowing down to her, he spoke thus: Dear Queen, what is your order? Please instruct me. Upon receiving your message, I have become most elated and returned to your gracious presence. At this, she replied, Kindly carry out the suggestion that you made to me earlier concerning the marriage of Vishwamara. Of your own accord, you are acting as a good and affectionate friend of my son. Whatever I said before to you was also motivated by love for my son. What more can I say? To hearing her words, the Acharya bowed his head and said, O Queen, I shall ever carry out your orders, bearing them on my head. Because the earlier statements was that he should continue his studies. Chaitanya Bhagavat describes a lengthy conversation between Jagannath Mitra and Sachimata about marriage versus studies.
It says that Jagannath Mitra was still alive at that particular time?
Yeah, at that particular time there was an extended conversation about with Jagannath Mitra and Sachimata together about whether he should get married or he should continue his studies. So saying, Vanamali went to Shivalava's house. That noble Brahmin quickly stood up and showed him to a seat, as etiquette requires. Then, with respect, he inquired from Vanamali Acharya about his welfare. Your reason for coming is surely to show me mercy. However, if there is any service that I can render you, please order me. And Vallabha had spoken thus. Vanamali Acharya replied, O Acharya, please hear my words. The son of Mishra Purandara, named Sri Vishwambhara Pandit, who is an abode of divine qualities, is a suitable husband for your daughter, Lakshmi. Therefore, I declare that today you should present your lovely daughter to him. After hearing the statement, the scholar considered his duty and said, Hear me. By the power of divine providence, this marriage must indeed come to pass. But I have no wealth, and thus it is not possible for me to give any dowry. I can give only my daughter, therefore kindly offer me some advice in this matter. If Sri Hari, the master of all opulence, is pleased with me, then by means of my daughter, the best of scholars can certainly become my son-in-law. However, as a pearl is joined with a gem by means of a valuable thread, these two can be joined in wedlock only through your invaluable connection. When Vallabha spoke thus, Vanamali became very pleased and replied respectfully, Because of your humility and affection for your daughter, everything must surely come about auspiciously. So saying, he returned to Sachi Devi and informed her of all that had happened. Is he speaking that way by saying that only Balaramanavali can actually negotiate this whole arrangement, that he would personally would not be involved? So it seems to suggest that, doesn't it? So saying, he returned to Sachidevi and informed her of all that had happened. Just by thinking of Lord Chandra's wedding, the Acharya became immersed in bliss. Upon being apprised of everything Sachimata spoke to her son, Dear boy, the time has now come for you to take a wife in accordance with the principles of Dharma. hearing this instruction from his mother, Gaurarvi considered them in his heart. Then, honoring her order, he quickly collected the materials for the ceremony. Quite different response than Vishwarupa.
Mm-hmm.
In an auspicious moment for marriage in which all good qualities took shelter, when mridangas were deftly played and kettle drums beaten, when Vedic mantras were intoned by the assembly of Brahmins, when all directions were decorated by lamps, garlands of flowers, flags, festoons, and so forth, the saintly Brahmins began the Arivas ceremony to purify the household of Srihari with pine scent, aguru, scented grasses, sandalwood, and other pleasing fragrances. Thus ends the ninth saga entitled Sri Gauranga's Marriage to Srimati Lakshmi Devi in the first prakrama of the great poem Sri Chaitanya Charita. Tenth saga. Gaura Vivahika. Festivities at Gaura's wedding. Then the Lord gave to each and every member of the twice born chewing pan with spices and a fragrant flower garland. Then he anointed them with pulp of sandalwood and scented oil of matchless fragrance. All the people exultantly sang due to gladness. Sri Vallabha Acharya came with saintly Brahmins, accompanied by their chaste wives and others. He worshipped his son-in-law by offering him scented oil and fragrant garlands. Then at dawn, when the clear sky was reddened by the rising sun, Gaurahari bathed according to the guidance of scripture, and with the assistance of Brahmins, he ritually honored his forefathers and offered them oblations to relieve them of any distress. He also offered oblations to the demigods and to all godly beings. Then a great festival flourished throughout the day as the pleasing vibrations of the Brahmins intoning mantras from the Yajurveda combined with the rhythmic beats of the mridangas, kettle drums, tambours, and other drums, as well as the charming and auspicious sounds of ululating from the lotus-like lips of the lovely ladies. Sachi Devi joyously welcomed the ladies of her family, as well as the gentlemen. In every way she could, she requested them, "How can I, a poor widow, perform this wedding alone? Kindly assist me by doing all that requires to be done." Hearing such pitiable words from his mother, Gaurahari's mind became much distressed by thoughts of his dear father, and from his eyes teardrops larger than pearls fell upon the mounds of his chest, making the illusion of a necklace. Standing among the chaste women, Sachi Devi became struck with wonder to see her son so sorrowful. "O Father Nimai," she said. That's confusing. She's addressing him as Father Nimai. "O Father Nimai," she said, "on this auspicious occasion, why do you let these inauspicious tears fall from your eyes?" Nimai sighed. His face became dark by remembrance of his father, and he reproached his mother for these words. Standing by her, he replied in a deep voice, resounding like a water-laden cloud newly arrived in the sky, "O mother, do you speak today as if distressed because I have no wealth and followers? Or is it rather because my father, who gave shelter to others, is no longer visible to our eyes?" "You saw the pots filled with fine betel nuts given thrice to the saintly Brahmins. and how they were all anointed with fragrant oil. You know how much wealth was spent on other deserving persons, and how I satisfied their every desire. Truly, my real power lies in spiritual duties, and yet I act in this way to show an exemplary character for all people.
Sometimes when books are translated, things like don't join, don't connect, thread of thought or questions and answers, not like a feeling, it's because the translator didn't particularly really understand what was going on, and if we're in the translation, sort of the words are there, but the real message doesn't come across.
Yeah, I find that a lot of times in Krishna's translation.
It just happens so fast, and then you're just thinking, "What couldn't author couldn't have written it like this? It just something's missing."
Standing among the chaste women, Sachidevi became struck with wonder to see her son so sorrowful. Oh, we just read that one. You know how much wealth was spent on other deserving persons and how I satisfied their every desire. Truly, my real power lies in spiritual duties, and yet I act in this way to show an exemplary character for all people. Although bereft of my father, I possess unfathomable power. Still, dear mother, I am filled with sorrow to hear you speak such words. Upon hearing this, his mother consoled him sweetly. She was asking, and says, why on this suspicious occasion are you letting these inauspicious tears fall from your eyes?
Yeah, that's why it somehow didn't really come across, like what was the communication.
One is because, are you speaking like this because I have no wealth and followers? And then he explains how he certainly has wealth, because he's given in charity to all the saintly Brahmins who were present and anointed them with fragrant oils. So you know how much wealth was spent on these persons. So, I guess he's dismissing that's obviously not the reason why he's shedding tears. Because he certainly doesn't lack that facility.
Hmm.
I guess it's just giving evidence, further evidence, that his tears are due to feelings of separation from his father. At that auspicious moment, noble and faithful Brahmins' sons assembled to anoint Gaurachandra, that best among males, whose attractive luster was enchanting to the women folk with the pulp of sandalwood, and the oil of a guru. They adorn the only friend of all living beings with silken cloths embroidered by jewels, as well as garlands of choice flowers and precious necklaces. At that moment, the venerable Vallabhacharya's duty to his forefathers and to the devatas concerning his daughter were complete. I was trying to remember the details of our conversation about Nimai's marriage, and someone had just dawned on me. It was when Jagannath Mishra was refusing to allow Nimai to study, and Sachimata says, if you make him, keep him an illiterate person, then how will he ever get married? Who will want to marry such an illiterate person and never be able to get married? I was trying to remember. I knew there were more details, and somehow it was escaping me. That was and then there was a whole conversation. Jagannath Mishra was justifying his reasons for forcing him to discontinue his studies. Which, of course, is based on his fear that if he were to continue to do so, he would follow the footsteps of Vishwaroopa.
He already had the dream by then?
The dream came afterwards. Yeah, the dream came after that conversation. At that moment, the venerable Vallabhacharya's duty to his forefathers and to the devatas concerning his daughter were complete. His daughter Lakshmi had been decorated with ornaments and her complexion shone with a luster like precious white gold. Then he brought the exalted Brahmins whom he had invited, and after introducing them to the bridegroom, the Brahmins said, "To invoke auspiciousness, let us immediately start the festive procession with hymns from the Samaveda." Then, just as Shiva went with Parvati to be wed on a golden peak of Mount Sumeru, Gaurahari went to the Acharya's home in the palanquin, carried by godly men, engaged by Vallabhacharya. All the gentlemen shouted, "Jai, Jai," and lit the way with blazing torches. When they arrived at his ashram, the Acharya himself ushered in Sri Gauranga and gave him a heartfelt welcome. He bathed the Lord's lotus feet, offered valuable gifts, poured refreshing spiced water to sip, adorned him with fragrant flower garlands interwoven with gold tinsel, and burned incense scented with aguru. The golden luminescence of the bridegroom's smiling face shone with the brightness of the full moon, defeating Cupid, and his slender body was as brilliant as Mount Sumeru. His hands were beautiful lotus palms. His hands with beautiful lotus palms glittered with rings, bracelets, and bangles, defeating the opulence of a forest of desire trees. Because Sri Hari fulfills the desires of all those who surrender unto him. The moon-like luster of Sri Vallabha's nicely ornamented daughter dispelled all darkness. Leading her forward, he offered her at the lotus feet of the Guru of all the worlds. Thus joined together, that couple's beauty shone forth most effulgently. When the brilliant opulence of those two luminous faces met, their sublime splendor brought to mind the conjunction of the moon with the auspicious star Rohini. Then, like Shiva and Parvati, they took delight in showering one another with heaps of flowers. The Lord of Lakshmi was seated, and Lakshmi also shyly sat down. Then, after purifying himself by performing achman, Vallabhacharya, who was well conversant with Vedic precepts, approached the Lord to ritually present his daughter to him. In ancient times, Sri Brahma washed those lotus feet. Thus he attained the intelligence for universal creation. Now Sri Vallabha bathed those same lotus feet.
What's that? Last time. Yeah, you ever hear that before?
Brahma washing lotus feet. Mm-hmm. No.
Yes. Sounds interesting.
Never know. The Acharya desired to eradicate the darkness in his heart by taking shelter of Vishwambhara's dazzling toenails. When Gaura appeared in a former avatar, the great Indra once presented him his own imperial lion throne, bedecked with gems and the royal blanket. Now Sri Vallabha offered a regal seat of silk to that same lord, Sri Gauranga Hari, who was dressed in splendid yellow garments, that he drank the beauty of the Lord through his eyes. He honored the Lord according to the Vedic process of etiquette, beginning with the offering of Argya, and so forth, and the hair of his body stood erect out of bliss. Feeling very grateful to him, Vallabha placed the hand of his lotus-eyed daughter in the hand of Sri Hari. When that great and joyous festival ended, the all-pervasive and sense-controlled Lord Vishwambhara, who takes away the burden of material existence from all the worlds, brought Lakshmi Devi to his home. They rode on palanquins and were applauded by the townsfolk. Thus ends the 10th sarga entitled Festivities at Gaura's Wedding in the first prakrama of the great poem Sri Chaitanya Charita. Still recording?
Yeah.
Sarga. Sri Gauranga Dhananjayas Shashri Lakshmi Vijayotsava. Gauranga travels east for wealth and the celebration of Lakshmi Devi's victorious death. For wealth?
Yes.
I thought he went to perform.
This is his home in Bangladesh now, not Gaya.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Then Sachimata, having put on that very great festival with the assistance of the Brahmin ladies, welcomed her son and daughter-in-law into her home. With much devotion, she gave grains, scented oil, and garlands to the Brahmins. To the chiefs of the craftsmen, the dancers, and others, she gave wealth. Thereafter, the Lord dwelt happily in that auspicious house with his family members, resembling the moon surrounded by the stars and clear sky. Just by the sight of Sri Sri Lakshmi Narayan in the home of Sachi Devi, each of the personified qualities of good fortune came to reside there, just to advertise the fame of their own opulence. Just by the side of Sri Sri Lakshmi Narayan in the home of Sachi Devi, each of the personified qualities of good fortune came to reside there just to advertise the fame of their own opulence. Because he was now situated in household life, Govardhan set forth eastwards, along with his associates, to acquire wealth, and by so doing he purified those lands. In whichever land the victorious Lord visited, the people became jubilant to see his face, which appeared radiant like the Lord of the night. By seeing that face, men traverse the farthest limits of the ocean of pleasure, but the women remained unsatiated, and they inquired, "Who could be the father of this person whose very sight purifies the beholder? Oh, what pious acts did his mother perform that within her womb she held such a transcendental male? We have never before seen such a person. Simply by beholding him, the pride of Cupid is crushed. And who is that fortunate woman who has been blessed to become his wife? She must have worshipped Shankara for a very long time. No, no, certainly, because he is Narayan, she can be none other than Goddess Lakshmi. There is no doubt about this." Sri Hari heard many such statements made by the people. The Lord cast his tear-moistened glance of love upon them, continued his journey. After journeying to the bank of the Padmavati River, he bathed as enjoined in Shastra and resided there, while saintly men offered him faithful worship. The Padmavati is a very great river, equal to the Ganga in her potency to purify conditioned souls. Her water flows very swiftly, and she is surrounded on both sides by great sand dunes. The great and splendid banks of the Padmavati, which were the habitation for saintly folk, were beautified by crocodiles, dolphins, and fish that flickered like lightning within her water.
By crocodiles.
Yeah, no.
You're just watching them.
When Sri Vishwambhara bathed there, he cleansed away the abundance of accumulated sins, and thus the Padmavati became the most excellent and auspicious of holy rivers. Lord Hari dwelt on her banks. The Lord is known as Madhuha because in a previous avatar he slew the demon Madhu, who attempted to destroy the Vedas. He whose saintly persons intensely hanker to see within their hearts, of their heart of hearts, took pleasure in giving to the eyes of those very pure and great-hearted souls. Took pleasure in giving pleasure to the eyes of those very pure and great-hearted souls. The self-controlled and compassionate master of the universe, eager to taste the mellows of scholarship, taught all those Brahmins for a few months. During this interval, the most fortunate Lakshmi Devi, whose husband was dearer to her than her own life breath, remained firmly fixed in her vows of service. She served Sachi Devi in many ways, such as massaging her feet. She cleansed and anointed the temple with fragrant oil and decorated the terrace with swastikas and other auspicious designs. She made very tasteful preparations, offered them with devotion to the deities, and then offered incense, lamps, and garlands. Sachi Devi, much pleased by Lakshmi's services, her speech, her gentle behavior, and her thoughtful deeds, pondered for a long time of some way to reward her. Her bodily hair would thrill out of intense affection for her son's bride, and she cherished her like a daughter, doting on her, just as she did her son. Once, while she was thus residing in Sachi's home, a snake came, incited by divine providence, and bit Lakshmi Devi on the sole of her foot. Seeing this, Sachi Devi felt great anxiety for her daughter-in-law and immediately called for doctors specializing in snake bites, who came and endeavored to flush out the poison. Although Sachi Devi chanted mantras and applied many other remedies, she was unable to alleviate the effects of the snake's poison. Therefore, she considered her daughter-in-law's death to be an act of the Almighty Lord in his form of eternal time. She arranged that the Lord's young wife be decorated with a garland of tulsi leaves and placed in the waters of the daughter of Janu. Then, accompanied by other ladies, she chanted the names of Lord Hari. Then, as a host of Gandhara airships entered that clear sky, the devas headed by Lord Rama and accompanied by perfect beings recited the following auspicious song. Mother Lakshmi, mother of the cosmos, has given up her body within the celestial Ganga while remembering the lotus feet of Sri Krishna to re-enter the presence of her master. Mahalakshmi Jagan Mata Kantu Svaprabhu Sannidhau Smitva Krishna Padam Bojo Svaranadya Deham Atyaja. Then she departed for her resplendent abode, the form of which is full of auspiciousness and which is unattainable even by Indra and other devas. There, in that planet, which is worshipped by all other planets, Sri Lakshmi is replete with transcendental opulence. Thus ends the 11th saga entitled Gauranga Travels East for Wealth and Celebration of Lakshmi Devi's Victorious Death in the first prakrama of the great poem Sri Chaitanya Charita. Twelfth Sagar, Sachi Shoka Anodana. Gauranga dispels the grief of Mother Sachi. Sachi lamented sorrowfully for her dear daughter-in-law, who was so dedicated to Dharma, and the streams of tears flowing from her eyes bathed her breasts. She cried, "O most vile and vicious serpent, for what reason have you done this deed? Why did you not bite me with your terrible teeth and leave aside my daughter-in-law? My very spiritually inclined son departed for foreign lands accompanied by his students to earn gold and grains and engaged his wife in my service. Now bereft of my daughter-in-law, how can I look my son in the face?" Sachi lamented intensely at the passing away of her dear daughter-in-law. Being agitated by grief, she instructed her relatives and friends, "Please perform the required family purificatory rituals." They all did so, but as Sachi departed for her home, tears dropped continuously from her restless eyes. At once her friends and relatives gave her comforting care, and after a long time, Sachi Devi apparently became awakened to stable and happy consciousness. She would remember the face of her son, and her mouth was always filled with the names of Krishna. Meanwhile, after Lord Parameshwar passed many days very gladly in the company of those great saintly persons, he returned, bringing their gifts of silver, gold, and fine garments back to his home. When Sachi suddenly saw her son arriving one day, his effulgence as bright as the full moon, her heart was not content, but rather filled with the great anguish of separation from her daughter-in-law. Upon seeing Sachidevi, the lotus-eyed Lord fell at her feet, took the dust from her feet, placed it on his head. But when he looked into his mother's pure face, he became mystified. The sinless Lord sprinkled the nectar of his smile and words upon her, and after presenting to her whatever wealth he had gained, he said, "O Ma, do not keep this sad face. Tell me, how is your daughter-in-law?" Sachimata, although made happy by Vishwambhara's words of nectar, spoke in dejected accents as she thought of Gaura's excellent wife. Then from the depths of her heart, she narrated to him the whole story of his wife's departure from this world as teardrops trickled from her lotus eyes. Because his mother was weeping, Gauranga's body quickly became suffused with grief as well as joy. After hearing her words, he who was renowned as the slayer of the demon of doubt addressed his mother with eyes that were moist with compassion. Then the master of all living beings spoke in such a way as to conceal from his mother the fact of his own divinity. He said, "Hear from me about the true situation. Actually, Lakshmi was formerly an apsara who recently descended to the earth. It is known that once, while she was dancing in the assembly hall of the liberal Indra, the feet of that apsara, whose face was luminous like the moon, slipped for one moment, and thus she disrupted the assembly of dancers. Noticing this, the Sureshwara cursed her, saying, 'Be born as a daughter of a man on earth.'" I've never heard this. "She fell at the feet of Indra, and he spoke further, 'O beauteous one, thereafter you shall become the wife of the Lord of all beings and experience the immense happiness of the abode of Sri Hari, which is rarely achieved by the demigods. Go now, most lovely lady." Hearing this statement from the Lord of the demigods, the maiden became very joyous. Now, to free herself from the sinful contamination born of Indra's curse, she is bathed in the water of a celestial river and has departed for the Lord's abode.
After
she was bitten by the snake. I guess that was the result of her slipping, disrupting the assembly of the dancers. She was told by Indra that she has to take birth as a Devata daughter of a man on earth.
Maybe we should continue a little later.
Yeah.